Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. This is my second live stream I've done, but I do have 30 podcasts in the books with practice. As you can see, I've got my favorite Indian, the only Indian I know politically, that lives down the street from me, G. Mangani. G, I apologize. I've always said G. I've never thought of your last name. Is it Mangani, Mangini? I apologize if I mispronounce it.
Maybe. Maybe I should put that in there, but it is Mangani, so yeah.
Mangani, okay, yeah. Mangani. And
how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Gee, give the audience here a little bit of an introduction for yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm an elected member of the Rancho Santa Fe School Board here, and if you don't know where Rancho Santa Fe is, it's down in San Diego County, kind of like the midsection of it. It's a very rural area, and I was elected in 2018. And won re-election 2022 for another four-year term. And I'm glad to be here.
Well, and I'm glad to have you. I like G. I view peer, meaning we came up at the same time. He's still holding office. I decided to leave office after my term was up. And it was a good time that I had in getting to know G, getting going to the Lincoln Reagan dinners or some of the big events. So we've kind of come up together here a bit. It's funny to the audience because I went from a three-man panel down to a one-man panel all of a sudden. We're waiting on somebody to show up. Another individual had a family situation arise, and it's kind of hard to find a replacement G here on a Friday night. It's, you know, family night, weekend starts. That's how life goes. But we got a great topic, some great topics for y'all tonight. We're going to talk about AB 1955, and I call it the Safety Act or Parent Betrayal. And we're going to unpack the controversy with California's law that allows schools to shield what they're teaching kids when it comes to pronouns, transgenderism, and things of that nature. We're also going to talk about the Olympic debacle. That's not as clear-cut a case as most people think, and that is the Armenian boxer destroying the Italian boxer. There's controversy that the Armenian did test for XY chromosomes, but has been seen as a female the Armenian's whole life. I don't know if to say he or she here, because it is a controversial issue. And the final topic we're going to talk about is Trump speaking at the National Association of Black Journalists. So, G, it looks like it's you and I. Oh, hold on. Hold your horses. We got the big guy here. This is one of my favorite analysts, and I welcome Mr. Craig DeLuz. Craig, give us a quick introduction.
I'm glad I made it to the program. I don't know. Is big guy because my waistline's gotten a little bigger, or
no? It's those shoulders. You got some nice shoulders right there.
Yeah, there you go. Got those straps there. Oh, look at the arms. Well, look at the arms.
Just to tell you a little bit about myself, 30 years experience in politics and policy and media. 20 years on the school board. I'm the current director of communications and spokesman for the California Republican Assembly. Host of the Rundown, talk show Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Just been involved in politics. I'm a car-carrying member of the vast right-wing conspiracy.
There you go. And we're going to hit a topic that both these gentlemen are probably going to have to deal with because it, you know, with the school board issue. So let's get right into it. As I said, I call this a safety act or parent betrayal. We're going to unpack the controversy of California's AB 1955 to give you a little bit of background. It was introduced in this January of this year, and it was signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom July 15. And what it does is protection of LGBTQ students' privacy rights, which ensures that students' sexual orientation and their gender identity are not disclosed without their consent. Think about that. A child has to give consent so his parents can find out what's happening to him or her at school. Supposedly, it's support for parents, guardians, and families of the LGBTQ community, and it aims to provide resources to help the families understand and support their LGBTQ children, which I don't understand because you're keeping information from them. It supposedly protects the students from being involuntarily outed by school staff, and safeguard school employees from retaliation when they support and protect LGBTQ rights. Before we get into it, I have a quick question for both of you guys. We'll start with G. When I saw all this stuff, the teachings of transgenders and the pronouns, all of that, my first thought was parents are going to freak out and explode. There's going to be a lot of confrontations, potentially physical. We've only seen, and I'm not condoning that. I just thought that would be the natural reaction. We've only seen that nationwide from one group, and that was in Glendale, I believe, and those were immigrants, you know, who were ready to throw down with Antifa. Remember that incident about a year ago? And the cops had to stop the immigrants from taking on Antifa. Gee, what are your thoughts? Were you surprised? Are you surprised there's not as much pushback in terms of what you see the parents and the anger and their willingness just to literally die for their kids? Or am I just not reading this right?
Well, no, I just don't think a lot of parents know what was passed. It did. I mean, it even escaped my attention for a couple days, and I'm on a school board. So I think a lot of parents don't know. It's been summertime. Maybe that was calculated that, you know, people on their trips across the United States or in Europe or in Asia, and they're just not paying attention. So I'm glad Chino Valley District decided to go ahead and challenge this in the courts. And I believe right now there's a request for a stay on this law until it's settled by the courts, which I hope that stay is passed. But I think it's completely immoral that and just take the whole transgender LGBTQ plus part out of it, that it's immoral that any school district would imagine to hide information from the parents. And I get, like, there are some family situations out there where you have abusive parents, right? And so you have mandated reporting in schools or whatnot. So I can be sensitive to that aspect of it, but to pass a law that's just blanket law that kids have total privacy, and I believe this goes all the way down to kindergarten, which, I mean, kids at that age don't really have the ability to, you know, think of what, you know, to make decisions on their own, basically. But to say that the school district has a higher priority in deciding what a kid can and can't do in this one issue right now, it's just like having a foot in the, or a toe in the door, and it can be expanded to other areas. So take the whole LGBTQ thing out of it, and I think it's just an immoral law. I think there can be safeguards where you say, okay, well, if a child decides that they feel uncomfortable because their dad might beat them up, let's have some kind of exclusion or some kind of plan B for those kids. But to just have every kid in across the state of California have to go to a school official first rather than their parents, I think it's bad law.
Craig, your thoughts?
So one thing I think there's one thing that it's important to clarify, and that's that first and foremost, parents are the first and primary educators of their children. They're the ones that are responsible. When we send our children to school, we do not give up our responsibility or our rights. We delegate our part of our responsibility for them to teach our children the basics, the reading, writing, arithmetic. We don't give up our rights. We are still, in the end, responsible. And as a part of that responsibility, it's holding those who are educating our children accountable for what they're teaching our children. Now, having said that, I also want to make sure to point out one of the things about this law that not a lot of people are catching on to is it prohibits a school district from implementing or putting in place a policy requiring staff to notify parents. It does not say that staff cannot notify parents, meaning if a staff member believes that this is important, they can take it upon themselves to notify parents. And I'll give you an example. In our school district, we do not have a policy that says that parents will be or won't be notified in the case of issue of transgenderism, if the child wants to change their gender. We do, however, have as a policy that anything that affects a student academically, their academic performance, their health, their mental health, or their physical health is something that we would notify parents about. We could communicate with parents about. So there's a way to address it. You can't mandate that your staff does it, but your staff is allowed to do so, is allowed to make that communication.
Yes, Greg, that's true.
Or at least they're, I'm sorry, at least they're not prohibited from.
Right, so you're talking individually, because my thought that this law was created specifically because schools were creating policies to tell the parents. And doesn't this law negate the school itself from creating the policy?
Yes, it does create the school from creating the policy requiring parents to be notified.
Gotcha. Okay, looks like we lost G there. Okay, so now there are we'll keep going. I'm sure he'll pop back in. So the supporters are obviously the LGBTQ advocacy groups, the civil rights organizations like the ACLU, which they've taken a political side. You know, I mean, that kind of happened maybe a few decades ago, but there was one time where they would sit there and side with the KKK for freedom of speech and things like that, but those days seem long gone. And educators and school counselors who support the LGBT. Now, the arguments are it emphasizes the importance of protecting the students' privacy. That's what I keep getting over and over, and reducing the trauma and promoting the supportive educational environment. Craig, in your career as the legislature in your role in all this, the way they keep saying it is as if these children are in danger. It seems to me like it's an overblown excuse to implement these laws.
Well, keep in mind that the left tends to govern based on, or legislate based on, the exception rather than the rule. In most cases, parents want to and need to know significant things like this. And the one of the number one reasons why this is significant is it's already been agreed upon by the right and the left, by everybody, that those who deal with gender dysphoria are at a higher risk of suicidal ideation. Now, if right. there were any other condition that a child had, that a student had, for that dramatically increased, like 50% increased the likelihood that they were going to potentially attempt suicide, parents would be notified immediately. But in this case, they're saying, no, we're not going to notify the parents. We're not going to allow you to notify the parents, even though your child is potentially at risk for, or at greater risk for, committing suicide or self-harm. That makes absolutely no sense. And what it does say is, though, is another move where the state is attempting to take control of the guidance and the morality and the teaching, the role of the parent. They're trying to take over for the parent in the raising of our children.
Correct. And I'll ask you, Craig, this, we'll go to you after this, but how are you mentally, both of you have already thought about, okay, how am I going to deal with this at the first school board meeting when you get people who are going to show up there? Gee, and I'm not asking you to give away anything if you feel you haven't figured it out yet, but what are your thoughts on how you're going to deal with it? And how do you expect the rest of your board is going to react to this?
Well, I believe the rest of my board, they don't like this law. And I would imagine that they think it's immoral too, just knowing how they think. When the parents come, I mean, the key word here is the child has to give consent, right? So if they've given consent already by way of some document, I would imagine it's the green light for the school to notify the parents of any medical issues or whatnot. That includes these issues, right? So, and part of that is, you know, like Craig said, if there's a potential for self-harm, that is a mental health issue, and that needs to be addressed immediately with the parents and whoever's, you know, basically qualified to deal with that. I'll tell you that our school staff, they don't want to have to make these kind of decisions, right? I don't know of one teacher that's excited to jump in and say, okay, now I'm ready to, you know, do this and move this thing forward. So I don't see the parents being happy about it. I don't see the staff being happy about it. Our board's not happy about it.
And Craig, what are you hearing there? And have either one of you, Craig, before we go to you, have you actually heard from any parents yet?
I have not heard from any parents, but as I noted before, we already have a policy that says if there's anything that affects a child, their academic performance, their mental health, their physical health, the parents are to be notified. We don't speak specifically to gender or gender identity issues, but that's something that falls within the realm. And as noted earlier, this bill doesn't prohibit individual staff members from notifying. It just says that the district can't pass a policy requiring staff to notify parents.
So it's truly going to be a one-on-one relationship again with the parent and the teacher in terms of what is happening with their child. And it's also going to mean, I would imagine, that the parents have got to become, I don't think I'm wrong in saying this, but it seems like over the last generation or two, parents have looked at schools as babysitters for their kids and not been as involved. I just remember growing up, parent-teacher conferences were so important, and the teachers were always the ones pushing that. Now it seems like these parents better get a grip on reality and start looking forward to those parent-teacher conferences to find out. The reason I say that, going to my question to you, G, is on social media, especially TikTok, you see a lot of teachers, and I don't know what percentage of that lot of teachers, I say TikTok or social media, is in relationship to actual teachers around the country, but they brag how they hide or talk up, you know, the LGBTQ, you know, issues to the kids, and they hide it and tell them to hide it from the parents. Are you concerned with that, or is that something that's become a bit overblown because of social media?
Well, you always have to be concerned with activists. There's activists, left-wing activists, right-wing activists. They're all over. I would imagine that's a minority. And at least in my district, I don't know of any that are that militant about this kind of thing. But they're out there in other districts, I'm sure. And, you know, rubbing their hands together saying, okay, now I get to move this, their, you know, pet agenda forward. So I just imagine a teacher, you know, let's say seventh grade, Johnny comes and says, hey, I really like Lisa. And the teacher would be like, okay, whatever. They're not going to call the parents and say, hey, Johnny, your Johnny likes Lisa, right? So let's say, well, Johnny likes Bill. I still don't imagine that teacher going, okay, I'm calling this parent right now and letting them know. Like, I think the teachers just want to educate, and I think most of them are like that. They're just professional educators, and they're good people. And then you got the activists, and, you know, we just have to deal with that. And the parents will out the activists. I mean, they're not happy when activist teachers try to indoctrinate their kids. And it goes back to what Craig was saying. The parents should be the primary educators. And when you have left-wing people who, you know, lean socialist, they think that the parents are failing at their job and that the state has to take over. And I think most parents will fight back. Even Democrats, I think a lot of Democrats would be upset about having their rights taken away as parents over their children. So,
Craig, what do you think? Agree with G there?
Well, I agree. I mean, first and foremost, it comes down to the idea of people doing their jobs. Like, as parents, you need to be the primary influencer of your children. If you don't know what your children are learning in school, if you don't know what's going on in their classroom, it's time to find out. It's time to spend time getting to know who's spending time with your children at school. It's a responsibility. I mean, they're spending more time at school than they're spending at home. So it's important for parents to be engaged. You need to be the primary influencer. I'll just say this. If the school has more influence over your child, or media has more influence over your child, well, then you need to rethink how you're parenting. I'm just going to say that right now. And as far as schools and school districts, you know, administrators need to know who their staff members are. They need to be spending time in their classrooms, understanding what it is that they're teaching and what it is that they are promoting. A lot of times when you see these instances of teachers doing this, they're doing it because they have administrators who are very lax and who are not spending enough time monitoring them, supervising them, and making sure that they are being functional and doing what their job is supposed to be. I believe that social media is not reality. I do not believe that most teachers are in support of this. Most teachers just want to do their job. They just want to educate kids. They're also not, I also believe most teachers are not, you know, radical pro-parent, I'm going to fight the system to defend parents either. That's not most teachers either. They're there because they want to educate kids. They want to do They want to do no harm. In a lot of cases, in cases like this, they don't know what to do. So they need to be guided. They need to know, look, this is the responsible thing for you to do. And so as board members, we need to set the direction in our communications with our staff and with our administration. Our administrators and our administrators then need to make sure that direction, that vision, that communication is then filters down to the staff members.
You know what I like about you two that I'm hearing is calm, cool, and collected. Because when I hear these things, I get in a panic mode. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, because I've always believed teachers indoctrinated. And I've always believed that only because I look at the results. Being involved in identity politics, I always look at those school graduation rates at what level and all that. So I've been for over a generation now in panic mode. Man, we're not teaching our kids. So to hear you two talk in your calm manner is actually, as corny as it sounds, very assuring. You know, kind of makes you, oh, okay, we got some smart people. Because the last I saw was in Chula Vista down here in San Diego area. And there's one woman on the board wanting to bring in all the leftist agenda. And they were trying to kick off a Christian-based woman off the board because she was against it. So I appreciate that, gentlemen. The final comment, G talked about it. There is a lawsuit was literally within days, and it was put in by Big John will be happy to hear about this, a libertarian. The conservative movement really got the school boards on notice a few years ago with a lot of these issues, and San Diego actually had a big hand in that when they wanted to teach Islam in our school systems here, and a lot of Christians said, well, hold on, you can't teach about Christianity, how come you're going to teach about Islam? And that kind of got the ball rolling nationwide. But there's an individual named Corey DeAngelis, and I'm not sure if either one of you have heard of him, but he's pretty much flipped a lot of Republicans out of their seats by exposing them being funded by the teachers association, and you know, they tell their conservative base, hey, I'm with you, we don't want this, we don't want this, and yet they vote for it. And it seems like he's leading a group that has challenged this and put it into court. Where is it at? So the request, as G stated, is to have a stay until there's a court's decision on it. And if it's successful, most or all parts of AB 1955 will be invalidated. Craig, your thoughts on that lawsuit? And it's an easy question, at least to me, is do you think it should be happening, and do you see it succeeding? I know you're not a lawyer, but just based off your experience and or what you think should happen.
Thank you for clarifying. I am not a lawyer, and I did not sleep in a Holiday Inn Express last night. But, you know, yes, the lawsuit needs to happen. And unfortunately, we're in a position here in California where we have elected officials at the local and state level, quite frankly, in many cases, who don't care about the law, who don't care about our constitutional rights, and will pass laws completely and utterly ignoring the Constitution. So sadly, we have to go to court in order to fight for our rights, in order to make our rights clear to some of these statewide elected officials. So yes, it definitely needs to happen. They definitely need to be taking them to court. You know, we're in a state where we said that we believed in local control, but the legislature passed the local control funding formula and all these things that we're supposed to be making decisions about at the local level. But it's like, we'll give you local control as long as you do exactly what we tell you to do. And I'm sorry, California is a big and diverse state. We have various varying communities. We have very different cultures. We have different subcultures. And not everybody believes in the same things or promotes the same values or issues that they seem to be pushing and promoting in Sacramento. And let's also be clear. The legislature is not representative of the state of California. If you look at issues that are divided based on party lines, right? California is really like a 60-40 state, right? 60% left of center, 40% right of center. And then depending on the issue, you might see those numbers cross over. But we have a legislature right now that is 80% to the left and like 20% to the right. And half of those on the right are so weak-kneed. I'm sorry to say this, weak-kneed and ineffective that they might as well not even be there. They're literally just seat holders.
agree.
So we have to. We wind up having to go to court, and then we've got a state court system that is full of a bunch of people, all appointed by the left, all appointed by people who don't care about our rights, who are neo-Marxists. And so where we really have an opportunity is going to be in federal court. That's where we're going to have to make our stand, because unfortunately, like I said, sadly, I have little to no faith in the judicial system as run by the state of California.
I agree. Gee, you're the one who mentioned this early on. Your thoughts on the morality, I guess, of this challenge, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the courts say. If the courts are leaning towards, well, the state has a duty to protect the children from their parents, which it's wrong and immoral to think that way, it's going to be upheld. And then at that point, we're going to have to figure out what kind of actions we take as, you know, governing board members of districts that supposedly have local control. And it just reminds me of the masking mandate. And if you remember right after the Super Bowl, rules for thee, not for me, they're over there at the Super Bowl, unmasked and enjoying, I'm talking about the state officials, enjoying the Super Bowl with 60 to 70,000 people there. Meanwhile, our kids, who are not at risk of contracting COVID or being harmed by COVID, had to continue to mask because of political pressures. And our district joined, I believe it was Roseville up in North California, to say, no, we have local control and we're going to exercise that right. And, you know, thank you for your rules, but we're not going to follow them. So maybe something like that happens with this. I don't know. I'm not prescribing that for my district because that's a board decision. But maybe we'll see that across the state if school boards decide, no, we're not going to comply with if they believe it's immoral to do so.
My take on this before we move on to the next topic is that I've always viewed when I was a child, I'm in my early 50s now. I'm lying. I'm in my mid-50s. When I was a child, I saw a relationship between the school and the parent. But I also saw that deteriorating as I got a little bit older and the schools became babysitters and now the school's making a power play for our children. I'm not one of these who views it, we gotta take back our kids. I've always viewed it as it's a relationship with the teacher, helping guide the parent in terms of the math, the reading, the science, to make sure their child grows up. But they also learn social skills at school. And I think that becomes part of the relationship. But I think parents need to stop going to work, spending a couple hours at their kids, and now get involved with their kids, you know, going to these school events, you know, things of that nature, and get that relationship. It's not about one side winning. It's about coming together and working together to raise our children. Because I do fear for the future of our country based off the data we're seeing in the graduation rates at the level our kids are graduating, and specifically for a lot of minorities in that sense. So thank you, gentlemen, for that take. Let us move on to breaking barriers or deepening divides. Trump at the National Association of Black Journalists Conference. This happened July 31st in Chicago. So what went down? It was a back and forth with Trump and the journalists. Trump stood up for his record on black issues, discussing his work on criminal justice, the economy. The reporters brought up Trump's past controversies, the comments. Trump took shots at Vice President Kamala Harris's, her qualifications. And Craig, I want to get your input on this because I did see one of your posts on social media about that. And I want to – let's get right into it with this question. Trump called himself the best president for black people – the quote. He called himself, quote, the best president for black people since Lincoln, unquote. And that obviously got mixed reactions. My take before I go to yours is – when I first heard that, I was like, well, as much as I think LBJ was racist, this, that, he did pass the civil rights law. But then I saw a strong black woman on TikTok just go off on that. And she said, well, LBJ was forced to pass that law and Republicans campaigned to get the Civil Rights Act passed. But in my whole honest opinion, I think Trump did a lot, if not as much as any other past president for black Americans. Before, Craig, we get to you, I want to get to G first.
Well, your thoughts on that? I just, yeah, no, absolutely. When I saw him, I, you know, Was Trump serious? I think he thinks he was serious. Do I think he was the best since Lincoln? I mean, that's just the way he is. He's this New York braggadocious type of guy. And of course, like, if you're going to run for president.
Oh, did he freeze on us there, Craig? Can you hear him still?
It looks like he froze up on us.
All right. You're up, brother.
No problem. You have no problem. You have no idea how much I deal with that on my show. Just sometimes the Weber Nets, man. Oh, look, I think we got him back.
There All right, go. G, continue, Sorry. G.
Yeah, so I don't know what the last thing, but, you know, he's a New York guy, so he's going to say big things, and they're going to be generally true because he was great for the economy. People had jobs. The economy was growing. You remember when Obama said, what's Trump going to do? He's going to wave some magic wand and create jobs. Well, I don't know what kind of magic wand he waved, but it worked. And right now we're going through what I believe we're in a recession, probably the last month or two.
That's right.
And the unemployment rate ticked up to 4.3%. So, you know, along with that, black people are losing jobs, white people are losing jobs, Hispanics are losing jobs. So do I think he was the best since Lincoln? I think it was a great hyperbole, but, you know. And that's what I love about Trump. He'll just talk big. And it's funny. I mean, it's charming. So that's what I believe about that.
Craig, before you respond, Trump did do the First Step Act, which helped release a lot of people, not just black, but a lot of low-level criminals out of prison. He was a lawyer for that. He gave the historically black universities long-term funding that hadn't been done. The unemployment rate at the time for blacks and for everybody was at the lowest it had ever been. And more importantly, what people don't realize is the working wage was going up. And that's a rarity. That's why in my eyes, I'm like, gee, you're right, hyperbole. But when you kind of look at some of those numbers, you're like, well, you know, he did do a damn pretty good job. Craig.
Well, Donald Trump has always had a tendency towards hyperbole and exaggeration. He's a salesman. He's a marketer. That's what he does. I think that when you look at a lot of the fact-checking that they tend to do on him, it's not that he's wrong. It's that he over-exaggerates. Did we have the best economy ever under Donald Trump? I don't know that you can say that because the economy of the 90s during the tech boom was pretty darn phenomenal. Having said that, we had a great economy. Right? We had come out of what was supposed to be the new Barack Obama's new norm of 2% economic growth, and from the first full quarter that Donald Trump was president, we saw it. It was never that low ever again during his presidency. You're right. You pointed out funding for HBCUs. You pointed out the First Step Back. You forgot to mention the executive order that he signed regarding police reform. He also put in place opportunity zones, a bill passed by Senator Scott. I mean, the fact is that he's got a good record, and he's got a good record for black America, because here's the thing, what's good for America is good for black America. I watched that as it happened. I watched the live feed, and I'll tell you, it started off. The first questioner was from ABC News, and she was just flat out rude. And what I appreciate was the fact that he pointed out how rude she was, and he was right to do so. I think he leaned on that one a little too much and a little too long, because, dude, you made your point. She was rude. She was rude. She made a long, long statement before she finally asked you a question. And then wouldn't let you answer the question. All that having been said, the only other negative criticism that I would have of him was the whole comment about whether or not she's actually black. I'm sorry. Let me just take a step back. If we are a party that is going to be against the idea of identity politics, then maybe we shouldn't be trying to play the identity politics game. Because to me, there's nothing that looks worse than a white Republican questioning whether or not a black person is actually black. I'm sorry. That bugs me. That bothers me a lot. You don't get to play identity politics when you want to and then decide we're going to go the opposite direction. The black community, America as a whole, keep in mind, we are brought together of many different cultures, many different peoples from all around the world. We're the only nation in the world that's built and built on that premise, not on a nationality, but on a set of ideals and principles and values. That's what we're founded on. And people come here from all over the world because they want what those values and those principles can bring them. My wife is East Indian. They're from Fiji. I'm black and Italian. You know what? We are a melting pot, and because you identify as a part of someone else's culture, because you adopt someone else's culture, doesn't take away from another part of who you are. And I just, this whole thing with President Trump is like, the number one weapon we have against Kamala Harris is her history, her record, her positions. Why are we not laser focused on you, on beating Democrats over the head with her record, with her quotes, with her own words and what she stands for? And I thought that he took advantage. He did do a good job of making sure that he made his points. But I think we need to stay away from and focus on that rather than get into the, well, she's not really black or she's not really Indian. And I get it. Some people are like, well, you know, she's pandering. Well, duh. We all know she's pandering.
Now, I'm not going to push back. I just want to take it from a different angle. And Craig, that's a wonderful photo. I mean, you belong in a damn Bruce Lee movie with that picture with the shades there. I assume that's your family there, Craig? Who is that there?
That is standing next to me in that one. That's my wife and her sister. And that's my father-in-law who passed away last December 18th.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's a beautiful family, and is your wife's sister, she's single for the fellas out there? I'm kidding.
Yes, she is single.
There you go. It's a great picture. Now, I agree with you. There was a podcast I saw last night, and I responded back. You guys are talking about this from the white man's view. I thought Trump was correct in bringing it up at that convention because it was the National Association of Black Journalists. I think there's a time and place to question it. But Kamala has such an atrocious record, such double talk. White people, you don't need to go down that road. I want us to watch. We got a comment here, and I'll post it up here in a second here, John. Thank you for commenting. But I want to show this video, and I want you to look at the black Democrats or progressives as you see their face start to curdle up, because the individual, I believe, is speaking the truth. And this is the audience that needs to be spoken to, not to white audiences, not to Latinos or Indians, but to the black audience. And I think that's where we defer on. I differentiate a little bit. But let's take a listen here. It's from CNN. Let me find it here. Here we go.
You know, we all know when, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris ran for, you know, attorney general, you know, and you can check me on this. News outlets said she's the first Indian American. She did run as Indian American. Okay. And then she was chosen for.
I hope y'all can hear it this time.
Nominee is the candidate for Joe Biden. And then he was told that you will get a black woman. So then she says, well, here is a black woman. So in all fairness, when she asked that question to President Trump, that's a valid, you know, answer, because that's based on her, where she was in her life, what she chose to be at that time. So that's where that answer comes in. So she's the one that did this. She's the one.
Hold on one second. I want to just make clear. I know.
Okay. I just cut it off because that's what it gets into. But you notice the reaction. And my take is there's a lot of black Americans who will vote for her because she's black. It happens in every culture. You get a Latino candidate, a lot of Latinos will vote for them, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's important to highlight that when Trump is speaking to the proper audience. Now, I'm being picky, but to me, that is part of strategizing and part of the tactics. And Craig, I know you want to respond, but let's get to G here real quick first on his thoughts.
Well, I'm with Craig. I mean, let's not and John Galston in the comments there. Let's not focus on the race, because, you know, if she's my children are half East Indian like I am, and then half Hispanic. So if one day they check one box and then the next day they check another box based on what's, you know, what they're applying to or whatnot, I'm not going to fault them for that. I think where Trump wins on this particular argument is in the idea that she will do anything to climb the ladder, right? So she will do anything yes. to gain a foothold or gain a vote. And if Trump would actually focus more on the policies and the flip-flopping of that, he would gain so much more. Like, for example, she said that on day one, she would, and I believe this was 4 years ago, but she would issue an executive order to confiscate ARs. Now, let's talk about that, because now she's going to lose the states of Michigan and Pennsylvania, if that's a real position, a policy position of hers. I think she said the same thing about fracking, and now she's going to backtrack on that. So let's you know, focus on the flip-flopping on that and show that she's, you know, going to say whatever expedient to gain votes for this election cycle. And I think where Trump wins on what he said at this convention is that basically people know that he's just speaking what's on his heart. His mouth is just going, and it's authentic, right? So it remains to be seen whether the authenticity of Trump contrasted with the inauthenticity of Kamala will really play in the ballot box in November.
Craig, before I get to you, I agree with both of you, but, and correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes people say, William, shut up. Don't go there. It's not that I'm trying to go there. As somebody who is not black, I have black in my family. I have my biracial niece works for Grumley's Media right now. This is very important to me. But when I see 90-some-odd% of blacks voting for Obama, not once but twice after they had 4 years of disastrous results, that's why I view it. We were in such identity politics. And a lot, in my eyes, a lot of people may not know this. And I get what you guys are saying, but it sounds like you don't think he even should go there in terms of when he's talking to black audiences to go, well, what is she? And gee, to your point, I get it. I have relatives in the same boat. It's not, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is when somebody uses it how she has used it. You know, to me, there's something wrong about that, but that's me personally. So Craig, your input, please.
Well, I'll put it to you this way, and I'm not going to say that your point isn't valid, but I'm going to – sometimes the messenger has to be the right messenger, right? Some people can say certain things. Like, I'll give you an example. If my wife is not being very nice to me and I know that it's because maybe it's that time of the month that's right around the corner,
oh my.
I can be 100% correct when I share with her, you know, I think you're just being upset because that time of the month is coming around. How do you think that's going to go for me?
Not well.
Not very well. It's not going to go very. It's not going to go very well for me. And that's the problem. Is Donald Trump is not the guy. I'm sorry, but you folks, he's just not the guy. Now, do you want to question her ethnicity? I'm like this. Like I said, there are people who are in my family alone. I'm black and Italian. My wife is East Indian from Fiji. My grandkids I've got. I mean, they're a Heinz 57. The point that I'm trying to make is focusing on that. Number one, it's an ineffective message, in no small part because most of the messengers are not the right messengers. So focus on the right message with the right messenger, and that is focusing on the policy, focusing on her flip-flops. I don't care if she's black. I don't care if she's Indian. I don't care if she's white, green, blue, purple, or orange. The woman is bad for America. She is a neo-Marxist that ruined the city of San Francisco, that has helped ruin the state of California, and is going to do the same exact thing as President of the United States.
Fair enough. I'll be honest, because I have held office. I have run for office before. And my take is simple. I think it's a strong tactic to use. But I also believe you got to listen to sound advisors. And I sometimes, what I fear could happen that I'm sure Craig, you would agree with is what happened with that Missouri senator. Mm. What was it, like 8 years ago when he talked about the rape, you know, the rape scenario, and it just destroyed his campaign. So sometimes you're right. It is better way. I sound like I'm being agreeable, but when you're talking politics in this scenario, you've got to be uber careful.
I just wanted to throw one more thing in. It's a distraction because you notice – And I follow and I deal with mainstream and ethnic media on the regular basis. Everything this week, everything relating to that event was about those words. No one mentioned the fact that Trump was there. He waited 35 minutes. They were 35 minutes late. He waited 35 minutes to go on. Kamala Harris didn't even show up. They said they weren't doing anybody via Zoom, and they allowed her to do a Zoom meeting, and nobody talked about what she talked about in her Zoom meeting. Nobody's reporting on it. That's
well,
what I mean. It becomes a distraction. It allows them to say, we don't really need to talk about Kamala's record, because guess what? Because we got this stuff that Donald Trump said.
Okay.
And I will tell you, I saw on X that, you know, they were making the liberals were making a heyday about him leaving after 30 minutes, but they started 30 minutes late, right? So they looked at every little aspect of this and tried to extract weapons to use at MSNBC and CNN and the talk shows that night. So I give Trump kudos for going into the lion's den. That's what he did. Kamala didn't show up to a friendly convention. Trump went in there, and you know, we'll see how it plays out. I think it will be a net positive, because I think his calculation is he's going to talk about it once. That was his venue, and then he's going to drop it. And everyone's talking about it now, right? So I think that was his goal. Get the focus off of Kamala's message and get it on to something else.
And I will tell you, the other thing I'll tell you is this. If Trump is going to be successful in this election, it's not going to be because black people voted for him. It is going to be because those who are so focused on race have overshot again, like they did in 2016. The people who won the election for Donald Trump in 2016 were the independent and Democrat blue collar union worker in the Rust Belt. And when they didn't vote for him in 2020, that's when he lost. And these folks right now, they don't want the identity politics. That's why they didn't vote for Hillary. They want somebody who's going to build our economy, someone who's going to make sure our community's safe, someone who's going to make sure our borders are secure. And that's what he needs to focus on. I'm not worried about black, white, purple, green, orange. I'm worried about the American people. That's Donald Trump. And that is genuinely Donald Trump.
Craig, you're right coming from our side of the playing field, meaning conservatism. One more question before we move on. And real quick, the media, as you guys saw in the notes I sent you, it was black and white. Progressives were condemning specific points while the conservative side was talking about how he went in there. I think the overriding message for some that are on the fence was, hey, he went into the lion's den at least. Well, where was Kamala? So I think that message will get through to those that matter, to Craig's point. And Craig, you kind of convinced me. Stay away from it. But that said, you do have a big base there that seems to be teetering because of the economy, because of this, who still vote tribalistic. It's a dirty word to me, but that's where we're at right now. Do you think it's enough with the economy? I think it could be enough with the economy to get him across the finish line by saying taking swaths of – I guess what I'm trying to say is he's not going to win New York. But I think we're at a point where he could take big chunks of what was traditionally a given vote for blacks because of the economy. So I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but it sounds like what you're saying is stay away from that, because
that's not the reason why they are voting for it. If one of the things you'll notice is that when you look at the numbers, first of all, single women are overwhelmingly, they literally, other than the black community, single women are way, way, way. They are the most faithful, dedicated group voting for Democrats, in this case, Kamala Harris. And black women lead the pack. But black men are actually in polling breaking 30% yes. towards Republicans or towards Donald Trump. And it's young black males who are leading the way. And it's because they're seeing economic opportunities fleeting away. I've said this a dozen times. When I was in the barbershop and we were still kind of deciding between, people were still talking about Trump versus Biden, one dude couldn't have been any older than 25, 26. He said, look, he was probably 30. But he was like, look, I'm voting for Donald Trump because my pockets were fatter under Donald Trump.
That's right. That's right.
Real simple. There was economic opportunity. And that's what they want. They don't want handouts. They want opportunity. They want to be treated fairly. They want to be given an opportunity to scrap and fight for theirs, and not have the government. Because what's happening now is, as they're just, you have a community that's just starting to break out on its own, and then you have in many of those communities government jumping on them and making it difficult for them to start businesses, difficult for them to fund businesses, difficult for them to get business insurance, all the things that they want to do in order to take advantage of those economic opportunities. Government is standing in the way.
Correct. Correct. G, you have any final words on this topic before I give my last take?
It's the economy, stupid.
You know, okay, so Craig, to your point, I first voted in 1984. My dad, the street I lived on, there were all special forces, all military. My dad or my neighbors, they were talking to a black man. It was 1984. He goes, I'm voting for Reagan. And he said pretty much the same thing, that his wallet was fatter. You know, he enjoyed and he was the military, so his wallet was fixed every paycheck. But he was saying, you know, his dollar was going much farther. The other thing is, Brian Kemp won Georgia when he raced against Stacey Abraham because of the black vote. The male black vote turned out for him, and it was like a certain percentage much higher. And to you Democrats who hate us, I'm proud to say we have an Indian, a black man, a Latino, and yet we're all mixed with other stuff in us. We as conservatives just literally want to be Americans. And I think that's what Trump wants. People knock on Trump. And I'm not a big Trump fan when he was before he got into politics, because Big John, my libertarian brother there, he's correct. Trump did a lot of terrible things to the smart little guy to get what he wanted in construction. So, but I believe he's on the right track. He wants a better America. He wants a stronger America. And I think that is resonating. And with that, I want to move on to our final topic. And let me bring up my notes here, because I do not want to screw up the pronunciation. I want to shift over to the Olympics, gentlemen. As I'm sure you all saw, there's a current issue right now, and it's not as black and white as people want to make it to be. XY chromosomes and Olympic dreams, the controversy surrounding Iman Khalif. And Iman Khalif is an Armenian boxer who fought an Italian, and the Italian in 40-some-odd seconds quit because she was saying it was just too painful, the brutal shots. He has – I'm sorry. See, before I go on, guys, how do we address – I mean, she's a she on paper, so I think that's how I should address her. I've always gotten confused in terms of what's the right thing? How would you address her, Craig, before we go on, and then G, real
quick?
Well,
in this case, keep in mind, we're not talking about someone who's transgender. We're talking about someone who is intersexed, meaning they were born – this is an individual who was born – although they had female genitalia, or at least the appearance as a baby of female genitalia, meaning they had no male genitalia, they also had an XY chromosome. So because they didn't have male genitalia, they identified this individual as a female. Now, this individual then went through puberty, and as they went through puberty, things started to change. All of a sudden, voice got deeper, hair got, you know, all of a sudden. So this individual was identified as a child, as a woman. But we identify male versus female based on chromosomes. Chromosomes, XY chromosomes, and those, it's the XY chromosome that creates a greater degree of testosterone, greater degree of bone density, greater fast twitch muscle fiber, all of which are things that make someone a better boxer, a better fighter. And in this case, we're talking about a combat sport.
Correct. So before you go on, because you're getting a little bit ahead of us,
Craig,
but that's okay. I assume you would agree with Craig there in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, if someone wants to be called he or she, that's what I call them. I just out of respect. So if she wants to be called she, I call her she.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've felt. Now, all three of us know an individual that this happened to. I'm not going to say that individual's name, but we know this individual. And I have no shame in my quest for knowledge. And I had some detailed conversations with some very detailed questions. And when I saw this story, because Big John and I, we got into it, and we always come to the conclusion we're not going to agree on this topic because or else we'll be debating all night long. But I felt I knew this situation. And when I researched the story, I'm like, that's exactly like our friend that happened to them. So it's a difficult situation. Now, Khalid, she has boxed against women throughout her whole career. She was disqualified from the competition because the International Boxing Association, Umar Kremlev, stated that the results showed she had the XY chromosomes. He claimed that she had higher testosterone levels than typically found in cisgender women, translation in biologically born women, I guess. And they later clarified that they did not undergo a testosterone. So I don't know how he made that claim if she had higher testosterone but were subject to a separate and recognized test. So maybe that's how. And everything is confidential. Now, some of the key issues in this, there's a lack of transparency in testing procedures. And for individuals looking at the picture, Khalifa is the one on the right. And the Italian boxer is the one on the left. There's a lack of transparency in the testing procedures. That's one issue. There's obviously conflicting. You know, the IOC sees it differently than the International Boxing Association. I don't agree with this from the ethical concerns about public discussion of private medical information because we're talking the Olympics. We're talking competition at a level that's seen publicly. And then there's the issue of balancing fairness and competition. And to me, that fairness is, you know, women should only be battling women in women's sports. And then what Craig already said, there's the complexity of all this. And what Craig just said, there's literally millions of Americans who have never heard that. They've never known about that. They don't understand that there are individuals like this. And I always tell people, the world is not black and white. So stop thinking it's black and white. Stop sitting there and looking at it from a political, ideological. There's things that transcend that, and we have to look at it. And as corny as it sounds, we have to have compassion to both sides, meaning this individual was born a certain way. And what it's DSD, differences of sex development, and that's what she's known to have. Now, what this boils down to is pretty simple, and G will go with you. Should Khalif be boxing against women?
Well, I would imagine. Did you say me first?
Yes, G.
So I would imagine that this genetic test was given to her during her teenage years, if not a little later, right? So all her life, I hope this is not too crude, but she's looking down going, I'm a girl, right? And so at some point, maybe she got into boxing, she started training for the Olympics, and then, you know, the testosterone started getting produced within her body, and then underwent genetic testing, and then turns out she has the XY chromosome. So that genetically shows that she would be a male. So does that mean she gives up everything and switches over? And then, you know, what? I don't know. I mean, it's too complex, way over my head. But I do look at Angela Carini, who's the Italian boxer, and she probably thought what everyone thought this morning, right? When I opened up my social media, which is probably not the wisest thing to do, but it's the first thing I do when I open up my phone, and I'm going, oh my gosh. I can't believe they let a man beat up a girl at the Olympics, right? But as I looked into it, it's like, okay, yeah, like you started off the segment, it's not so clear cut. And still, to me, like I couldn't make a judgment as to what the Olympics or her home country of Algeria should do. So I started thinking throughout the day, well, what if she was XX in terms of her chromosomes and still had the, you know, female body parts and all that, but she was juicing, right? She was taking steroids or testosterone to make herself stronger. I don't know if they test for that. I don't know if, because that gives an unfair advantage. I think it is something that the Olympics will go forward trying to figure out what to do, and they'll probably land at the same conclusion, let her compete. And do I have a problem with that? I probably not. But again, what I saw all over the social media, that wasn't accurate. And I think that's just because in America, we are allowing people born as males and having that extra strength compete in women's sports and beating them at their game. And, you know, I think it's a hair trigger response to what's happening here. And turned out that it was a lot more complicated than what we thought.
Craig.
First of all, I think there's one wrinkle we need to throw in here, and we're talking about a combat sport. We're talking about someone who is working to do physical harm to another individual. And you are now giving basically someone the sort of physiological advantage that a man, and by the way, I'm not saying that this person is not a woman. I'm not going to say, because literally she's been raised as a woman. She has evidently has the same genital makeup as a woman. Had no real reason until later in life to even know that they were not male, from what I understand. Having said that, though, this is not just about, this isn't even, this the trans thing aside, this is about safety and about safety of women. And you're telling me that you're going to allow somebody who has a significant physical advantage like that to be in a male of the same body size and body weight, a punch from them has about 162% of the force of a female, of a male versus female. And a lot of that is because of increased bone density and fast twitch muscle fiber.
That's correct.
I've sparred with people who are who weigh significantly more than me, who've weighed well more than me, and I will tell you, the punches from them hurt a lot more. There's a reason why we have weight classes, because that increase in muscle, that increase in power, that comes with increased in size. Well, there's also the difference in gender, and there's a reason why we don't have men fighting women of the same weight. Once again, this is a matter of safety. And I think in the case of safety, we need to err in the side of protecting people as opposed to not. Because if you're going to, the other thing then is, if you're going to allow this individual to compete and fight and box, then you have to allow transgender women to fight because Well, why not? You're already allowing this person with XY chromosomes to fight. So simply because I happen to have XY chromosomes, I identify as a woman, but I happen to have a tallywhacker, you're not going to – now I don't get to fight?
No,
I just – once again, to me, it's a safety – in this particular case, it's a safety issue. And there are already instances of girls and women who've participated both in combat sports and non-combat sports who've had run-ins with males in that same sport and have been injured. There was one case in a high school game where three players were injured in a high school game and they had to forfeit because they couldn't field a complete team. Because correct. One player was manhandling a player that identified as a female, male identifying as a female, was mangling the other team.
Right. There's a video. I wish it triggered my mind when you said it. A volleyball game, and there's a transgender, and you know when they jump up to the net and they do that magical spike, just pure unadulterated power. And there's a girl like this, and boom, hits her on the head, and just knocks her out in a concussion. But I had three words to say, or maybe two words.
Well, let me stop you right there. It was worse than that. She was paralyzed.
Oh my God!
Yeah, she's still dealing with traumatic brain injury.
Yeah, Craig's point, but in boxing terms, maybe G's a little bit too young, but Craig, you probably remember Kim Duke Koo, Ray Boom Boom Mancini, ABC, Wide World of Sports. When we all tuned in on Saturdays to watch boxing, he killed a man with his punching power and same weight class. What I try to tell people who want to play the political battle here, I'm like, you don't understand. Even a transgender, she's not a transgender, but even for the transgender, because that's where most of this resides in, it's that man still has longer arms, denser muscles, you know, the testosterone. At the moment they stop taking the estrogen and immediately punch butt back up, those are scientifically, let's say that we agree they're like females. They are still like women on steroids. They're like the East Germans of the 1970s. So for on Craig's point, he's absolutely correct. This is no if, and, or but. She should not be allowed to box. You got a comment here from Back to the Stone Age. Let me show this. Back to the Stone Age. Yemin Khalifa has been fighting since 2018, and her overall amateur record is stated as 37-9 with 5 knockouts. Is this perhaps a case of Karini not just being very good? Khalifa can have children. Yes, it could be a case of her not being very good. Yes, that is true. It could be a case of her not being very good, but we're talking Olympic level. So I would say it could be a case, but likely not. Also, it still does not negate the fact of XY chromosome. She started developing differently. This is one where it's science. You know, science comes into play here with the XY chromosome. Craig, you want to jump in here with the soundbite?
I was just going to say, how many of those 37 wins were because of the physical advantage as opposed to actual boxing skill? I mean, we don't know. So had a record. Well, 9 people. Maybe she's not that good of a boxer, but the physical ability. And I'll give you an example. I'm not a great basketball player, but there are a lot of people who are skill wise better than me that I can beat because I outweigh them by 70 pounds.
Well, here's the other example, and I hate to bring this up. Oh, my God. I'm going to get slapped by my family. No mas. Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard in their rematch fight. Sugar Ray realized, I can't outpunch him. He beat me that way. He outdanced him, outboxed him, and Duran got so pissed off on the power of punch, he said he just quit. He said, I'm not here to box. I'm here to fight. But at the end of the day, were 9 of those 9 losses because somebody was a better boxer. It doesn't change the aspect that once she was discovered to have the XY chromosome, everything changed. You know, we evolve in everything. I mean, I'm a scuba diver, probably a terrible analogy, but we now know so much about sharks. When we hear shark, us divers, we run and we grab our gear. Back in the 70s, everybody was hunting in the boat. So you evolve. Boxing has evolved. Scientifically, we're also, you know, better athletes. The drug use is, you know, we don't know, but you err on the side of caution is how I view it. And so to me, she should not be competing. And not everybody can be an astronaut. Not everybody can be a pilot. Not everybody can be a teacher. I don't think she should be a boxer. Before we close out the show, G, any last words on this?
The whole weight class thing. I mean, you know, you have the welterweights and they're not going to go against a heavyweight. And that goes in boxing. I know in wrestling you have weight classes because, you know, being a higher weight is going to give you an advantage. So maybe there's room in the Olympics for that. I don't know what the solution is. But you guys make good points. She has an advantage based on the testosterone and the muscle and the bone density, and that was evident this morning with the fight. And Angela lost really quickly. So,
and real quick to the Back to Stone Age, thank you for the comment. But real quick to your point, these are Olympic athletes. So I would sit there and say she's probably not a quitter. You know, she's probably somebody. It's just we're talking a level that the percentage is so small when you look at the world and how many people are able to compete. Craig, your final words on this topic.
I agree. And, you know, by the way, I do not blame her for wanting to fight or believe. This is not on her. And sadly, she should have never been allowed to do this because, once again, for that very reason. So I don't blame her. I'm not mad at her. I'm mad at the officials for not setting a clear line that protects the participants in these fights.
I agree. And again, I'll close it out by saying I do know somebody who went through the whole process. It was transgender, but same situation. What is it, DSS or DSD?
DSD.
And I learned a lot because of the individual's honesty. And that's why I'm more hardened on this. I don't blame Khalif at all. But the moment it was discovered with the XY is when every association should have been, we got to stop here. And as Craig said, put some lines in the sand here. And again, and I say this a lot, but it does break my heart for both Khalif and Karini, because they both competed. This is their dream. Mm-hmm. The percentage of people who do this is so minute. It's either side is going to get crushed, but I think for the safety, because this is a combat sport, and people in the same weight class, male on male, have died because of this combat sport, and that is something I do not want to see. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Guys, to the audience, I love these two guys. I wish they could be regulars every week. Craig is like a veteran when it comes to politics and the savviness, and G brings that intellectual capacity and that smartness, and I love them both. Before we go, G, tell us about yourself and where the audience can find you.
Yeah, just you can find me on my website, gmangani.com. It's my campaign website from 2022, but you can find out more about me there. And happy to be on the show again.
Yeah, and we will have all this information in the notes below at the various social media platforms. Craig.
You can find me easiest way. You can Google Craig DeLuz. You can do Craig DeLuz, at Craig DeLuz on Twitter. You can also find me on Spotify, The Rundown, 2A News, and Conservative Views.
And I always pick on Craig, but one day I'm going to ask him for, give us that list where we can catch you at late night on the boob tube. You know? So to everybody else, thank you for showing up. Please hit like, share, and you can find this pod or this live stream, which will become a podcast, and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. To everybody, thank you once again. We will see you next week. And until then, I am William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.